Chapter 9. I do not remember much of this time except that many suns rose and set. I thought about what I was going to do now that I was alone. I did not leave the village, not until I had eaten all the abalone did I leave, and then only to gather more. Yet I do remember the day that I decided I would never live in the village again. It was the morning of thick fog and the sound of far-off waves breaking on the shore. I had never noticed before how silent the village was. Fog crept in and out of the empty huts, and it made shapes as it drifted, and they reminded me of all the people who were dead and those who were gone. The noise of the surf seemed to be their voices speaking. I sat for a long time, seeing these shapes and hearing the voices, until the sun came out and the fog vanished. Then I made a fire against the wall of the house. When it was burned to the earth, I started a fire in another house. Thus, one by one, I destroyed them all so that there were no ashes left to mark the village of Galasid. There was nothing to take away with me except a basket of food. I therefore traveled fast, and before night fell, I reached the place where I decided to live until the ship returned. This place lay on the headland, a half a league to the west of Coral Cove. There was a large rock on that headland and two stunted trees. Behind the rock was a clear place about 10 steps across, which was sheltered from the wind, from which I could see the harbor and the ocean. A spring of water flowed from the ravine nearby. That night, I climbed onto the rock to sleep. It was flat on top and wide enough for me to stretch out. Also, it was so high from the ground that I did not need to fear the wild dogs while I was sleeping. I had not seen them again since the day that they had killed Ramo, but I was sure that they would soon come to my new camp. The rock was also a safe place to store the food I had brought with me and everything I should gather. Since it was still winter and any day the ship might return, there was no use to store food I would not need. This gave me time to make weapons to protect myself from the wild dogs, which I felt would attack me, to kill them all one by one. I had a club I found in one of the huts, but I needed a bow and arrow and a large spear. The spear which I had taken from the slain dog was too small. It was good for spearing fish and little else. The laws of Galasid forbade the making of weapons by women of the tribe, so I went to search for any that might have been left behind. I went first to where the village had been and sifted the ashes for spearheads, and then, finding none, to the place where the canoes were hidden, believing that the weapons might have been stored there with the food and water. I found nothing in the canoes under the cliff, and then, remembering the chest the Aleuts had brought to shore, I set out for Coral Cove. I had seen the chest on the beach during the battle, but did not remember that the hunters had taken it with them when they fled. The beach was empty except for the rows of seaweed washed up by the storm. The tide was out, and I looked in the place where the chest had lain. It was just below the ledge Unlap and I had stood on while we watched the battle. The sand was smooth, and I dug many small holes with a stick. I dug in a wide circle, thinking that the storm might have covered it with sand. Near the center of the circle, the stick hit something hard, which I was sure was a rock, but as I dug deeper with my hands, I saw it was the black lid of the chest. All morning I worked, moving the sand away. The chest lay deep from the washing of the waves, and I did not try to dig it out, but only so I could raise the lid. As the sun rose high, the tide came rushing up the beach and filled the hole with sand. Each wave covered the chest deeper until it was completely hidden. I stood on place, bracing myself against the waves so that I would not have to look for it again. When the tide turned, I began to dig with my feet, working them down and down, and then with my hands. The chest was filled with beads and bracelets and earrings of many colors. I forgot about the spearheads I had come for. I held each of the trinkets to the sun, turning them so that they caught the light. I put on the longest string of beads, which were blue, and the pair of blue bracelets, which exactly fit my wrist, and walked down the shore admiring myself. I walked the whole length of the cove, and the beads and the bracelets made tinkling sounds. I felt like a bride of a chief as I walked there by the waves. I came to the foot of the trail where the battle had been fought. Suddenly, I remembered those who had died there and the men who had brought the jewels I was wearing. I went back to the chest. For a long time, I stood beside it, looking at the bracelets and the beads hanging from my neck, so beautiful and bright in the sun. They did not belong to the Aleuts, I said. They belonged to me. But even as I said this, I knew that I never could wear them. One by one, I took them off, and I also took the rest of the beads from the chest. And then I walked through the waves and flung them all far away into the deep water. There were no iron spearheads in the chest, and I closed the lid and covered it with sand. I looked along the bottom of the trail, but finding nothing there I could use, gave up my search. For many days, I did not think of the weapons again, not until the wild dogs came one night and sat under the rock and howled. They were gone at daylight, but not far. During the day, I could see them slinking through the brush watching me. That night, they came back to the headland, and I had buried what was left of my supper. But they dug it up, snarling and fighting among themselves over the scraps, and then they began to pace back and forth at the foot of the rock, sniffing the air, for they could smell my tracks and knew I was somewhere near. For a long time, I lay on the rock while they trotted around below me. The rock was high, and they could climb it, but I was still fearful. As I lay there, I wondered what would happen if I went against the law of the tribe, which forbade the making of weapons by women. If I did not think of it at all, and made those things which I must have had to protect myself, would the four winds blow in from the four directions of the world and smother me as I made the weapons? Or would the earth tremble, as many said, and bury me beneath the falling rocks? Or, as others said, would the sea rise over the island in a terrible flood? Would the weapons break in my hands at the moment when my life was in danger, which my father had said? I thought about these things for 2 days, and on the third night, when the wild dogs returned to the rock, I made up my mind that no matter what befell me, I would make weapons. In the morning, I set about, though I was very fearful. I wished to use a sea elephant tusk for the tip of the spear, but it is hard and the right shape, because it is hard and of the right shape. There were many of these animals on the shore near my camp, but I lacked a weapon with which to kill one. Our men usually hunted with a strong net made of bill kelp, which they threw over an animal while it slept. To do this, at least three men were needed, and even then the sea elephant often dragged the net into the sea and got away.